B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the man talking in your backswing, Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT _ golf guy. Austin Cook was one of the bright young rookies on tour last year, winning the RSM Classic and coming within a shot of making the tour championship in Atlanta. Now, he hasn't begun his 2019 campaign as, well, someone we like to call Mrs. Cook is set to give birth to their very first at any time. The good news for us is that means his caddy, Kip Henley, one of my favorite people in golf, is free and clear to join us today. Also, we'll check in from Oahu and the Sony Open with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. And we'll wrap things up discussing the new rules for 2019 with Carolina's Golf Association's Director of Men's Golf, Chris Zay. But we kick things off with the gospel, according to Kip Henley. Kip, let's start out. Give me Austin Cook's status. I know that he is on baby watch. Where are we?
Where he says, he texted me yesterday, he says that the babe, even though I think it's due, like, see, it's due like the Sunday of Honolulu, which is this Sunday. He says there's, it's not even acting like it's wanting to come out yet. So we're our first start, even at best case scenario right now, is Phoenix. So that's, but if the baby delays, then it might even be later than that, which would really stink.
So, well, wow, that is considerable. So is he even practicing that much at all right now, or is he just there with her?
Well, I'm sure he's working around when he can, you know, the Jonesboro. Their weather's comparable to ours, Chattanooga, I'd say. And we've had some pretty mild days the last few days, so I'd say he's got some practice in. I hope he has, anyway.
Now, the important question is this. Is Kip being considered as a name, even if it's a girl?
Telling him to call. It is supposed to be a girl, and I said you should go with Kipalina. I don't think that's a problem.
He might have gone for it. She's never going for Kipalina.
neither one of them are even close to going for anything even resembling anything about me.
Kip Henley's Austin Cook's caddy. He's our guest taking dead aim. Hey, you were there last year. What is it about the course, the plantation course at Kapalua, that allows for such big comebacks and big score swings like we see just about every year?
Oh, it's full of par fives. What has it got, like five par fives?
Yeah, five par fives.
There's your answer right there. And let me think. They're all, let's see, they're all reachable. Let's see. I can only think of, they're everyone reachable.
Right.
That's how they get to it. They just tear those par fives all to pieces.
I mean, it seems like every year I'm blown away somebody's able to come. You just don't see tournaments where every year someone comes back from 4 to 6 shots to win, and it seems like it happens there almost every year.
It really does, doesn't it? It's an odd place. All golf courses can do this to you, but that one especially, it's like it can be, you can get going backwards on it a little bit and just can't find birdies anywhere. And then once you get going on it, it just seems to get so easy. I think it's a bigger disperse than most golf courses. You know, it's, you know, the wind's blowing around almost every single day. But once you get going, it just seems really, no matter what you're shooting on it, you're throwing away one or two anyway, just because you get to hit a lot of wedges, you know, and you get to all the par fives. But no matter what you shoot, if you shot 58, you think, I pissed away a couple somewhere. You can feel like, you know.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm watching Shoffley's last round, and he was just firing peas off the tee. I mean, I don't think I've seen pro tracers that straight in a long time, and he was hitting them and reaching down for the tee, so you know he was feeling it. And, I mean, he was just threading it between bunkers.
Yeah, you know, those two, we got paired with them. Me and Cookie got paired with them 2 or 3 times this past year. And at Austin, you know, he's a kind of a quiet guy, his caddy, but he's really a knowledgeable cat. You know, I think they played college golf together. I'm almost positive, didn't they?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but Austin is a great player, was a great player and stuff. And, I mean, their relationship is cool to watch. They're just so chill with each other. And, I mean, honestly, I tweeted the other day, but they'll stand there. Xander will stand over a ball, and you think, well, he's supposed to take it back any second, and he'll say, like, you got that wind out of the right, correct? And Austin will be sitting there talking to him. I mean, he's full on ready to go. And they're sitting there carrying on a conversation about the wind, or are you sure you like this club? Yeah, Austin's perfect, and he'll take us. He'll start it back. There's no one else on tour does that I've seen that will talk 1 second before he pulls the club away.
You know, there's something about just Schauffele in general as a player that I've observed these last couple of years that he's been on tour. And you see a lot of these guys that, you know, you may not see them on the leaderboard every week, but you see their name every week, and then two or three times a year, they're just going to get hot, and they're going to either win or finish second or third at a big tournament. Just every year, he's that kind of player.
His game is so complete. I mean, you're just surprised you don't just shoot the fur off of it every time you go out with him. But him and Austin both, you know, they're left coasters, but they're chill. They're really cool guys. I don't know how to describe it, but they're really a couple of sweet guys to be around. I like them.
Now, from your standpoint, I know Augusta is a tough trek, but nothing's a tougher walk than Kapalua, right?
I think it's the hardest walk. It's close because of Reno, you know.
Because the altitude.
Yeah, the altitude, Reno, and the purse. So you're in a bad mood the whole time you're there. I really think Reno outsucks. Maui, but you know, Maui last plays is like, well, I don't know, 60-80 grand, so you know you're going to make some bank when you're going around there. So you got something to look forward to the whole time. But like, if your guy makes the cut on the number at Reno and don't shoot 7 under or 8 under on both Saturday and Sunday, you don't want to get out of that bed on Saturday and Sunday in the hotel in Reno. It's hellish because it's a tough track, and your guy's going to, he might not even have a comma in his check if it finishes last. It's such a bad purse.
Kip Hidley is Austin Cook's caddy. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Sony Open at Wailea this week. Completely different kind of golf course. If you had to play one or the other, which do you prefer?
Oh, Wailea, without question. Wailea, you know, even though Wailea, the amenities and the you know, the infrastructure is old and run down, and the cart paths are like got roots growing through them. And I mean, it is really an old, and the clubhouse hasn't changed in 20 years. And the course, I mean, they built one or two tees 3 or 4 years ago to make it a touch longer. But I'm telling you, it is the least changing place on the PGA Tour. But it stands the test of time. Even though it's not a bomber's place, you know, you have to put the ball in the fairway there. It's really one of the most underrated tracks on the PGA Tour. Wailea Country Club is, period. It's a great track. It's a shot. It's a, you know, it's just the bombers can win and the poopers can win there. It's just like Hilton Head. It's really a great test.
You know, I think the best move they ever made, I remember years ago when that tournament on that course was a par 72, and it was sort of like playing in the desert. You had to roll 28, 27 under to win.
Oh, yeah.
But the moment that they switched it to a par 70, all of a sudden that became a real golf course and a real tournament.
No doubt. I can't remember what the hole on the front side was that they took off, but I know it's the one on the back. Let's see, it's 10, 11, 12. 13 was a, you know, just a cake and ice cream par 5, and now it's a really hard par 4. You know, I know it's still you shoot the same numbers on it, but your outlook is way different standing on that tee. You know, you're praying for a 4 to get out of there on that hole. So, yeah, that really changed. They did used to shoot in the 20s almost every time in Honolulu, didn't they?
Yeah, John Houston, I think, had the record for a number of years on tour, and I think he shot a 28 under or something at that tournament.
It would be, they would do that now for sure. So that's 8 shot less par now, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Isn't that right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And Maui, even though it's a great track and fun to be there because of the scenery and the whales and the beauty, and it's incredible, but it's such a bomber's paradise. That, you know, I was watching Gary Woodland standing there on 16. I don't know if it was Saturday or Sunday, but if you're caddying for a medium or to shorter hitter, you're holding your breath on that tee ball when your guy's teeing off, because it's easy to put it in the face of one of those fairway bunkers or hang it a little bit and shoot it in the bushes over there. And I'm telling you, you're really holding your breath when your guy's teeing off. And he stands up there and don't even look at his fairway's 80 yards wide. He aims it right over the middle of the bunkers and just blasts it up there. He cannot hit the ball in trouble there. And it's, for a short hitter, you can hit it easily in the junk, in the trouble. So I don't like Maui at all. I think it's just too far hitter. The Shoffley, he kills it too. He's underrated with his speed. That guy sends it pretty good.
One guy I wanted to ask you about, I'm glad you brought up the Bombers. Have you had a chance to see this kid Champ in person?
Oh, yeah. You know, I tweeted again. I'm always go back to my Twitter. I tweeted this. I was in Mexico 2 years ago,
yeah.
I think, on the range, and he had Mundied in or got in or something. And somebody walked by me, you know, and somebody said, hey, watch this right here. And I walked down, look at it, and it was like, zing, that ball was getting out of there fast. But, you know, it's, to sit there and look at it, I mean, if you were looking at 15 guys on the range, if you didn't really know what to look for, you wouldn't notice it because his swing, you know, it's kind of like Couples' old.
Right.
It's such, you know, it's kind of, it's not like a big fall down blast recoiling thing. He's making a perfect golf swing, and the ball's, it's hotter than anybody else's, but it doesn't look as thrashy as some of the other far hitters, you know. Some of the other guys, you go, you know that ball's getting out there because they're swinging really hard and slipping around. This guy's got great, pure action. It's going, but it don't look like it's going as far as it's going.
Kip Henley is Austin Cook's caddy. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. I wanted to talk to you a little bit from a caddy's perspective. The new rules of golf came into effect, or the altered rules of golf for this year. And I was down at Pinehurst watching a junior tournament and actually saw some of these come into play and to see how it actually looked. And I don't know if you have thought about it or watched a little bit and seen, you know, which ones will actually come into effect with the pro game. Really, I only think a handful of them will. Do you think anyone will be putting with the stick in outside of DeChambeau from 12 feet and in?
I think you'll start to see it more and more and more.
You know,
Dave Pelz put out his numbers on it, and even though it's small, it is a definite, he says it's a definite small advantage. And, that, you know, and you're looking for the smallest of advantages out there make a difference in, you know, millions of dollars. So I think you'll see a lot of guys, and it's going to be a pain in the tail for us.
Yeah.
If you're playing with a guy who doesn't want it in, and you're playing with a guy who wants it in even on a three-footer, I mean, it's going to be a lot of walking up, switching, put it in, take it out, hand it to me. You got to stand over here. And a lot of these caddies know I'm not one of them, but they're on the green. They're if they're not reading putts, they're standing over there with their book out, and they're making notes like crazy. These guys are, I mean, they're so note-taking crazy guys out there. I don't do notes. I just kind of try to remember, or I just forget it and go on. But these guys that are used to sitting over there not picking their nose, not doing anything, they're going to get busy putting that pin in and out if you play with one of those guys. You'll have to really pay attention a lot. And the only thing worse than that rule change, I think it's really a bad rule change. The only thing worse than that is the tapping down of spike marks and green damage. I mean, I really think that's going to be, when we get to, like, Pebble Beach, you're going to see guys go crazy smacking the greens down because a footprint is damage to the green, correct?
Right.
I can fix a footprint. It don't have to be a spike print. It could be a footprint. So these guys are going to go crazy. And when we get to, if it's rainy Pebble Week, I can't wait to, well, I'll probably be caddying, but I can't wait to see how that comes across on the boob tube. It's going to be gross, trust me.
You know, one thing I noticed back to keeping the stick in from this past weekend, and these were some pretty good junior golfers out there, and this theory came to me. This isn't as much a pro tour thing because pros don't have as many 20 and 30, you know, foot putts as amateurs do. But I really think you're going to see a study at the end of the year from amateur players and recreational players of leaving the stick in on long putts, and I think people's percentages are going to go drastically upward in terms of converting two putts from long distance because that stick provides depth perception that wasn't there before.
Well, I didn't, you know, I agree with the depth perception, but obviously the balls that are going too hard to run across the middle of the hole, they're going to hit something and stop closer than they used to, you know.
Yep.
And you know, even though I hate the rule change, I hate it, it really makes sense for the amateur game. And in our game, we played yesterday and day before, I had gambled games 2 days in a row. I putted with the pin in. I bet I putted in with 10 times in 36 holes. I bet I putted with the pin in.
Well, you
so
know,
I'm going to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You're foolish for not doing it at certain times. You know, if I had a 30 or 40 footer, I wanted to say attend it. Then I said, no, don't even worry. Just leave it alone and let me putt it, you know. So you're crazy for not putting with a pin in from any distance whatsoever. So speed is such a factor.
Another rule that I think is going to come into play a lot in the pro game, in fact, I can't wait to see someone move loose impediments in a bunker and actually have the ball move, and then we're really going to have a problem. But moving impediments in bunkers, and it was really bizarre to see people moving impediments in, wait a minute, I can't use the word hazard anymore,
yeah,
water areas or penalty areas, and taking practice swings in penalty areas. All my years of playing golf, I was just sitting there going, what are you doing? And then I realized, you can do that now.
That's going to, you know, that's going to, the dishonest golfer, even, you know, that rule will get abused because those guys get in there in the grass, you know, and the stuff around their ball, and they're going to take a big old swooping practice swing right next to their ball. That's going to, even though you're not allowed to improve your intended line, you can whack the grass now, right?
Can yes.
You not take a practice swing?
You can. You can do whatever you want.
There's going to be guys who will take advantage of that, trust me.
They're going to use their wedge like a Sith in there.
Yeah. Just a little sling sickle in there.
Kip, what do you think about the search rule going from 5 minutes to 3 minutes? Normally, you don't have this problem until you see a lot of searches at the U.S. Open and you see a ton of searches at the Open Championship, and that's where I think this could really come into play.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're searching for your ball, 5 minutes is a lot longer than people think it is. You know, a lot of people think, well, that's 5 minutes, and it hasn't been. And whenever I like to wear a watch when I caddy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not wearing my watch that day, if my guy's ball goes into the trash, and as soon as we get there, I'll say to one of the spotters or the standard bearers or our scorer, I go, anybody got a watch? And they'll say, yes. I say, give me exactly 5 minutes from right now. And I'll tell them. And you'd be surprised how long that lasts. So I think that's one of the good rule changes for the USGA.
Get you out of here on this. Kip Henley is Austin Cook's caddy. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. You once upon a time did some caddying for Vijay Singh. Over the holidays, I came across a video on Twitter of this insane workout that Vijay Singh was doing. And all I could imagine was Kip Henley standing there with a Coca-Cola and a moon pie watching Vijay Singh do that. Did you ever witness this insanity in person? And did he ever try to get you to participate?
I watched it a lot, but I couldn't have it. He won't let you eat or anything while you're watching. You got to stand there and pay attention. And I got a cold shiver right across me when you even said his name. But, yeah, I witnessed that, you know, and that guy is a beast. He's up at 5 o'clock. He's in the gym, and then you got to meet him on the range like at 7. That guy's been up for like 2 or 3 hours when you finally meet him on the range. And when you show up, he's already got his trainer out there, and he's whacking like this 3-pound rubber ball that he hits with his driver at full speed. And this ball shoots across the range. His trainer will be like 30 yards away, and he's firing this heavy ball right at it because he's whacking it with a normal driver. I'm surprised the shaft doesn't bust. It matches his backup driver, and he'll sit there and hit full 120-mile-an-hour swings. Bow! Hit that ball. It makes noise. The guy's insane. Then, you know, I've watched him sit there in a fairway bunker at TPC and hit 54 irons in a row, and I mean 50 out of 50 right on the button. It's part of what Vijay does is sickly amazing to watch it go down. I mean, I'm sitting there watching him hit 50 straight 4 irons in a row out of the fairway bunker and never miss the middle of the face. Every single ball, pow! And he don't even watch them hit the ground. He's raking them over there, getting another one ready to go. He'll have two in the air sometimes. He's just repetition training is crazy. He's a beast, man. That wasn't no put on right there. He's crazy.
He's a tremendous follow on Twitter and a great guy in the game. Austin Cook's caddy and my personal life coach, Kip Henley. And when we return to Oahu, we go as Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer takes Dead Aim at last week at Kapalua, this week at Oahu, and a very interesting piece he's just written, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer has been really playing hurt, being in Hawaii covering the PGA Tour for the last couple of weeks. And we caught up with him on Thursday on the island of Oahu, side of this week's Sony Open right before he came home. There's a part of me that would be really upset with you regarding the picture that you just sent me of you sitting under a palm tree looking out over the Pacific Ocean, if I didn't know that you were about to hop on a plane and come right back here to Charlotte where the weather's going to be crappy.
Yeah, I've got one more day. I come back tomorrow night. So I actually now walked out right to the edge of the beach so maybe you could get the waves lapping in the background. I should send you the view the other way. It's actually a better view, but the lighting's not as good.
Well, let's start things off where I need to find out. How did your game measure up to the plantation course at Kapalua on Monday?
Well, I don't know if I should start at the beginning or the end. Let's start at the end where I made a 60-footer on 18 for birdie after hitting driver 9-iron into the 17th green and nearly making birdie there. Those are the holes everybody is familiar with, so that answers the question there.
Very nice.
It was okay, but first time out of the bag in a month. A little rusty getting started at 6:50 a.m., but they make that first hole look fairly easy. But, 500-yard par 4 to start the day, suddenly you're looking down at that rangefinder, that second shot going, is it really 235? I guess so. So it was moderately encouraging. A couple of hiccups, but it was fun.
Did you play it putting one foot in front of the other or getting in a cart and using your right foot to hit the accelerator?
Oh, in a cart. Even the players get cart rides in places during that tournament. It's almost literally half a mile between like the fifth green and the sixth tee.
Couldn't remember if it was on the front or the back. I remember when I played it, there was one. I felt like, did we make a wrong turn or not see something? We were in the golf cart forever.
Yeah, you could. You want to turn your location services on at times when you're out there. But, we were fortunate. We were first off in a cart and buzzed around and just gorgeous.
Well, fantastic. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. Before we get off of Kapalua, I had Kip Henley on earlier, who's Austin Cook's caddy. And it just seems to me, and maybe it's just my imagination, every year, or just about every year, someone is able to make up an insane amount of strokes on that golf course in the final round. What is it about Kapalua?
Well, I think it gives you the opportunities because the fairways are so big and the greens are so big. And, if you can start getting it close enough to the hole, it gives you chances, particularly coming in. A lot of players had chances and couldn't convert them. I mean, Rory never really got anything going on Sunday, but Gary Woodland, it's funny, what Xander Schauffele did was special. I mean, 62 on Sunday to win. And I mean, he's up to, I think, sixth in the world and become, one of the new faces of the game, but couldn't help but feel for Gary Woodland, who did everything right, shot 67, 67, 68, 68, and didn't win. And if he got undone by anything, it was at 18. He hit it so well off the tee that he got caught between clubs with his second shot going in there and then didn't hit a good second shot and couldn't make birdie when he needed it. But, I think that golf course just lends itself when the winds die, particularly. The first two or three days, I mean, it was really, really windy, and it was really hard to get a sustained thing, momentum going, but Sunday everything laid down and Schauffele was able to do it. Other guys, I think we've talked about it before, the notion that Ernie Els shot 31 under par on that golf course is just astounding.
Woodland, there was a terrible stat that they posted. He's now like 0-7 or 0-8 when he's had the 54-hole lead going into Sunday. And it's like you said, the guy shot 5 under par with the lead on any other given Sunday. That is more than good enough.
Yeah, he has done a lot of work. He's a very good player. who you've always sort of had the sense he can hit a lot of shots, but then the next phase of that is being able to turn the shots into playing golf and being able to score. And, you know, you could look at his putting stats over the last few years, and they're in the 130s, 40s, and 50s in strokes gained, which tells the story in a lot of ways. You know, he understands that people sort of view him as a bomber, and he can hit it, but he's added a more nuance to his game. That's been his focus, and I expect him to have a big year. He is never – we might know more about him or think more highly of him as a player if he'd done better in majors. I think he finished sixth last year at the PGA when he played with Tiger at the end. And that's his only top 10 finish in 27 majors, I think. So he knows where the next steps are for him. You know, I think he's 34 years old and or 32 maybe, and just, you know, in a position where he could do some good things. And, you know, he's a guy everybody likes, and you'd love to see him have sort of that big two or three win season that he hadn't yet had.
And Xander Schauffele shooting a 62. I think you may have mentioned this when we were doing our end-of-year surveys, that he may be the player that has a real possibility, he and Tony Finau, of making that next step from being a really, really good tour player who can win on any given week to one that, you know, he's got that look about him that if he gets rolling at a major championship, he's as good as anybody.
Yeah, well, we first sort of were introduced to him at Erin Hills when he made some noise there, and he had a chance on Sunday at Carnoustie last year, the Open Championship. And I think he is a very, very solid player. He's long enough. He's talked about wanting to get a little longer, but he's not short by any means, and just very solid and is getting better in the moment. He talked some after his win on Sunday about trying to handle his nerves, and you know, the more you do it, the better you get. But he said he was over that eagle putt on 18, and his left hand was shaking. He had to take a moment before he could hit the putt to sort of calm things down. But he's a guy who felt like he should have been on the Ryder Cup team last year and pretty well played his way onto a President's Cup team already, because, I mean, with this wraparound season, he's already won twice.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. This was the first tournament of the year with the new rules. Now, I got to hang out at a junior tournament at Pinehurst this last weekend, so I got to see them up close and personal, too. What were your thoughts? What rules came into play that you think are good, or that there may be some tweaking involved?
I think most of them are good. I think they're open to tweaking. I think the dropping from knee height thing might get tweaked. You know, it's a penalty if you drop the old way and play it. But if you drop the old way from shoulder height, you realize you've done it wrong, then you pick it up and drop it again from the other. From knee height, it's not a penalty. You know, I think basically the simple way is just hold your arm at your side, you know, hold your arm down and drop the ball from whatever. It's not knee height or whatever. But you saw Bryson trying to, you know, bend his knees and all that. I think that will probably get another look over time. I like for most of us, I think most of the rules are to speed play up for the average golfer. You know, things that we wouldn't normally worry about, but should if you're down the edge of a creek or something, you know, you can take the practice swings and hit the grass and all that. I think putting with the pin in, it's funny how quickly got accustomed to seeing it. You know, the first couple times I'm out there, like watching DeChambeau, okay, here it goes, he's doing this, and pretty soon it just becomes like, okay, they're leaving the flag in. You know, I think that'll be preference. I think there are a lot of guys, unless they're 70 feet away, are not going to leave the flag in. But Dave Pels will tell you, with all his years and hours of research, that you've got about a 30% better chance of making a putt if you leave the flag stick in, if you hit it at the right speed.
Well, I really, really believe that we're going to see stats at the end of the year, especially in the amateur and recreational game, of people, their two-putt percentage from long distances going up just because you now have something to provide you with some depth perception. I watched a kid, it was interesting, I watched a kid make a 30-footer one day, down at Pinehurst with the pin in. And then I watched the same kid hit a putt with the exact same speed from 30 feet the next day that hit off the stick and came back out. I saw both ends of the spectrum, but I really think that you're going to see people's putting percentages go up. You mentioned the drop. Is this something that's just a visual thing with all of us? Because you and I are unfortunately old enough that we can remember dropping a ball over our shoulder. And then I remember when the rule changed to holding your arm out and people thought that looked weird. Is this just a visual thing? It just looks weird to people?
I think that's part of it. I think there's a point in time where you have to sort of get used to it. I think it's way better than just imagine if they stuck with the proposal of 1 to 2 inches above the ground and dropping it. But it would look like, I think it will become more natural as time goes on. But, you know, Thomas Pagan of the USGA, who pretty much helped put this whole thing together, was out at Kapalua, and he said, we're going to monitor it and sort of get a sense from people what's working and if something needs to be tweaked. And one of the good things now is they don't necessarily have to wait in that 4-year cycle they used to when they would change the rules of golf. If they see they really need to change something, they can go ahead and make a change. But I don't think they're going to make any snap judgments based on last week or this week. They're going to let things play out and see where they are.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Speaking of the Global Golf Post, you've written a fantastic piece this week. With Johnny Miller gone, there's no question the most polarizing person in broadcasting in golf is Brandel Chamblee. You got to spend a good amount of time with him over an extended period of time. What were your impressions of Brandel? First, what you were expecting, and then what you found?
Well, I've known him for a good long while and had dinner with him a couple times, and it's great fun to go have dinner with him, just nice leisurely time, because you can – he's such a great conversationalist, and he's got such a breadth of interest and can talk about so many things. I mean, I think if you, I know not everybody loves him on television, which is probably part of his job description, but – I think if you were able to sit down and have a long conversation with him, you'd come away thinking he's really, really smart. He's really, really pleasant and really fun to talk to. And, we had dinner in Orlando, spent 2 hours and talked about everything from politics to Hamilton, the play, to reading Ralph Waldo Emerson, to golf and why he's going to come back and play a handful of Champions Tour events this year. I mean, and as he said in the story, and I asked, why are you going to put your game on display again? He says, sometimes it's good to scare the hell out of yourself. And so he's going to go out there and do it. And, he got to play in the Pro-Am at Kapalua, and that was a little bonus for him. But, I think he's a really interesting guy who I really enjoy talking to and spending time with. And, thanks for the nice words. That's part of our new premium Global Golf Global Golf Post Plus. You can, if you get our magazine for free on Monday, you can still do that. But if you want more every day, we've got a new addition to our library there. So you can just go to the Global Golf Post website and learn all about it. Every day we'll have fresh content.
Ron, when you're eating dinner with Brandel Chamblee in Orlando, do people come up to him and give him a hard time, or is he just able to sort of blend in?
To my knowledge, the restaurant was not terribly crowded, although it was a very, very nice steakhouse he chose, which I appreciated. we just sat there. Nobody knows him. He wandered in, and we just sat there and talked. And then, didn't see much reaction to him at all. And even I was talking to him before he played in the Pro-Am at Kapalua last week, and he's standing there with his golf bag on his shoulder and, if there was some reaction, I didn't see it. But then again, there's not a whole lot of people at that tournament. But one of the guys who played with him in the Pro-Am, I talked to for a while and just said, I played with a lot of guys in a lot of Pro-Ams. And he goes, that was about the best experience I'd ever had.
Wow, that's high praise. From reading your article, he appears to be very comfortable in his own skin and also very confident in what he's talking about, because he's one of these people that does a lot of research before he opens his mouth on a subject. And I think that's a very good combination to have if you're going to be, I don't know if the word acerbic is the right term, but how he comes across on television.
Yeah, I wouldn't call him acerbic at all, but I would say if he's going to make a point, he's going to have it researched and have his facts and his background and the foundation of his argument. I remember when we had dinner years ago, he talked about growing up in his family. He said everything was an argument in our family. He said not in a bad way, but it's just the way we grew up. He goes, even dinner, it would become sort of, you had to make your case for what you wanted for dinner. And so he's learned that, and you know, he's really good at just burrowing down into the details. And you know, he has strong feelings about the golf swing. I went back and read his swing on the book on the swing, and it, you know, it's very interesting, very much based on longstanding fundamentals. He is, he does not believe the guys are hitting the ball too far. He thinks it's the natural evolution of the game. But yeah, I think he is, has sharp opinions and strong opinions, and you can't do that job. You can't do it well without being that way, and that's what has separated him.
Once again, how can people subscribe to the new premium service of Global Golf Post?
Just go to globalgolfpost.com, and there'll be a little tab there that if you don't already subscribe to the regular magazine, which is, again, is free, you can sign up there, and then there'll be a tab if I think we're running a two-week trial thing for free just to see what we're doing, and then maybe for $50 or $60 a year, you can get fresh content every day. We're going to probably have two stories a day on this premium site, not all PGA Tour related, but amateur golf related, LPGA, architecture, travel, all sorts of things. So it's an exciting new part of our little journey here, and keeping me busy early in the year.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And up next, the director of men's golf with Carolina's Golf Association, Chris Zay, takes dead aim at the new rules of golf for 2019, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Hey, we're taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Chris Zay is the director of men's golf for the CGA, Carolina's Golf Association, and he's got a seminar at Wingate coming up on Tuesday on the new rules of golf in 2019, and we had the chance to speak earlier this week. Well, Chris, let's get started. I'm excited about the new rules that have come into effect, having witnessed a junior golf tournament in Pinehurst this last weekend and seen them. If nothing else, I think, number one, it's definitely going to speed up play. But number two, it's going to give those of us that have played golf forever a heart attack seeing things happen that we've known were against the rules forever, but now it's legal.
Yeah, I agree with that, Charlie. I think it's going to take us all a little bit of time to get used to it, but I think they did a great job for the everyday average golfer to enjoy the game. As somebody that's been doing this for over 10 years, I think you're right, and you're going to see something sitting in my cart and say, oh, wait, okay, we're okay. So,
oh yeah, and let's make no mistake about it. We are definitely separating the pro game from the amateur and recreational golfer, which is what the CGA is all about, and that's really what these rule changes were intended for. The pros do their own thing. This was intended to make our game better, and chances are a lot of these rules you were already playing by with your home groups anyway. Correct?
I'd agree again with you there. Growing up playing golf with my father, I would not say that he played by any of the rules that were in the rule book. So I think after learning the rules in the past and getting really heavy into it, I learned a lot. And like you said, there's a lot of things you couldn't do, but things that people were already doing, the USGA really took a look at, okay, do we really need to penalize somebody for this? And I think they did the right job. Okay, you hit yourself with the ball. That's already bad enough. The game's already hard enough. Why are we going to add a penalty to the additional penalty to the person for that? So I'd agree with you again. For the average person, they've done a great job.
Chris Zay is with the CGA. He's hosting a seminar, if you will, about the rules changes in golf at Wingate on Tuesday from 5:30 to 7:30. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. I've made just a small list of things that I think will come into play more than any others. We'll get your comments on them. And then if you have any that you've really thought about, I'd love to hear that as well. I'm going to start with something I saw a lot more than I thought I would this last weekend, and that's putting with the stick in from all over the green and from even, you know, there wasn't a distance thing. It was from 30 feet, it was from 10 feet, it was from 2 feet. Your thoughts on leaving the stick in? I think it's a great idea.
Absolutely love it. Again, we tend to play things on our weekend games where we do it anyway. And now the USGA, they actually came out and said, we didn't look at statistical data to make that rules change. We just simply said, what's going to help speed up the game? And is there a big advantage? Maybe, maybe not. We don't think the data would show that. So let's just speed the game up. I think it's a great idea. Again, I think we'll leave the flag stick in. Sometimes I'm going to take it out, but if it can help speed up play for me and the group I'm in, then I might just leave it in that hole.
Well, and so, I'm going to give you a theory just based on what I saw last weekend. I think that a year from now, if there are studies done, and I'm sure there will be, on amateurs and recreational golfers putting, I think you're going to see their putting stats go to the increase to the better from long distance with the flag stick in, because you have something to provide depth perception, and you didn't have that before. And I didn't think about it until I saw the rule in action last weekend.
And you might be right with that, because sometimes on the practice putting green, I tend to make all those putts from a long distance, and then I get out on the course and take the flag stick out and I miss them all. So I don't know if that might have something to do with it. So I'm not going to tell you you're wrong with that theory there.
Chris, another interesting rule change, and one that people will notice immediately, is a change in a drop. I'm old enough to remember when we used to throw the thing over our shoulder. And then I remember when that rule changed to an extended arm, and people complained that that looked ridiculous. What are we doing holding our arms straight out? And now the biggest complaint I hear is, oh, this looks ridiculous dropping it from the knee. I contend that the knee drop is actually pretty good. And that we're just going to have to get used to the way it looks visually. What do you think?
I'd agree again with you. I think there's a lot of backlash online. You read these articles, and people just want to make fun of the USGA for something. But in reality, I think it's a great change. The ball is going to stay near where you're dropping from, which was what it was intended for.
To speed up play.
And we're not going to be dropping numerous times, and it's not going to be rolling all over the place, chasing the golf ball down. Just drop your ball, get it back in play, and hit your next shot. So I agree with you. I think people just want to pick on the USGA for something, but I think, again, they made a good decision with this one.
Well, and I want to ask you a question about a drop, because I had this discussion with someone earlier. If it slips your mind and you make a drop the old-fashioned way, you drop it with an arm extended, and you then play that ball, that is an illegal drop and you will be penalized. However, if you extend your arm and drop it and then remember, ooh, that's not the way I do it anymore, and you redrop from the knee height, there is no penalty. Is that correct?
That is correct. If you can correct your error that you made there in dropping and drop the correct way, you will not be penalized for the first illegal drop that you did. So you can correct the dropping error.
This is a huge advancement in the game of golf, because golf used to love not only penalizing you for a mistake, but penalizing you for an error when you were trying to rectify the mistake. So this is actually really good.
I'd agree. I can't tell you how many times in the past I've penalized people for things. We don't like to say that we personally penalize you. We just tell you that it's a penalty.
Right.
But I can't tell you how many penalties I've told somebody they've received, and now in 2019, I'm really looking forward to saying, you know what, that's not a penalty anymore. So I think they did take a look at a lot of that that stuffiness that they kind of had in the game and have taken it out.
Chris Zay is with the CGA. He is holding a seminar at Wingate on Tuesday from 5:30 to 7:30 regarding the new rules of golf. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Something else that people will notice immediately: forever, your ball went into a hazard. Number one, it's no longer a hazard. It's a penalty area, so get your nomenclature right. But two, you've never been able to ground your club. You've never been able to touch any loose impediments in one of these areas. And now, as long as you don't move your ball, correct me if I'm wrong, pretty much anything goes in a penalty area, yes?
Close to anything goes. We're still not going to get in there and start stepping down our lie behind our ball or trying to improve our area of intended swing by taking a chainsaw off any trees or anything. But we can get in there now and move a stick out of the way. As long as our ball doesn't move, we can get in there and take a couple practice swings as long as we did not cause our ball to move. So it's not anything goes, but it's definitely a lot looser in terms of what it was in the past.
And again, with the recreational game, chances are you and your buddies were already taking practice swings in the hazard anyway. This rule changed more than any other. I was actually witness to a child at a U.S. Kids final several years ago, lose the tournament and lose the overall points for that season on taking a practice swing in a hazard. And I went, oh man, I hate this for him. And so I think this is a really positive rule change. And again, Chris, it goes back to our point of this was something that you were already doing anyway.
Right. And that's a great point. I hate to see or hear about that, something like that. But I think it is important to note while we're on it, attend one of our rules seminars, learn the rules, and you will enjoy the game. But yes, I think the USGA realized, you know what, everybody is not going home after work and pulling out our book and reading it cover to cover. So maybe we need to think about making a change. And I think that's what they did. And I can't stress enough, I think they did a great job.
Well, and let's be honest, the rules of golf at times were harder to understand than the tax code. I mean, it got a little too specific. What exactly are they talking about? Moving loose impediments in bunkers. Now, this has been, at some places, a local rule for some times in terms of moving rocks out of the way of your ball in a bunker. But now leaves, sticks, all loose impediments could be moved out of the bunker. And I think I saw a USGA official write this up this way, and I thought it was best, that being in a bunker is penalty enough. You should not be penalized further by loose impediments. And I'm like, yes, that just makes sense.
Again, I can't keep saying it enough. They did a great job, and you're right. You hit in a bunker, and you know what? Everybody doesn't play a course that has three or four employees blowing out the leaves of the bunker every time, every morning. So when you're playing Saturday afternoon somewhere, there might be some leaves in the bunker, and there's no reason to make the game harder because you're not allowed to, or you're not playing, you know, a higher end course like that. So I think it was another great change.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but before you go getting crazy moving loose impediments around your ball in a bunker, should you cause that ball to move while you're moving a loose impediment, that's a no-no, yes?
Correct. We still do not want you to move your ball while moving loose impediments. We still want you to play your ball from where it lies to the best of your ability. If you accidentally move your ball while you're looking for it, while you're searching for it, that's okay. We're going to just replace that, no penalty. But if you know where your ball is at, and you're not on the putting green, you really should play it from where it lies and not cause it to move.
I'm glad you brought up the putting green and the search. We'll get to both. Chris Zay with the CGA is our guest taking Dead Aim, talking about the new rules of golf. He's hosting a rules seminar at Wingate on Tuesday from 5:30 to 7:30. We've always been able to repair ball marks on greens. And in fact, we always encourage you to repair yours and three others while you're on a green. We've never been able to touch marks made by spikes and or shoes. Now, all damage can be repaired on a green. Do you think that this is a good thing, or is this something that could slow up play even in the recreational and amateur game?
Yeah, I think that rule change might have been one of the ones that was made for the professional game. And a lot of the rules got to where they were because of the professional game. So this year was such a big year in bringing it back to the recreational players. But I think that one is mainly for your professionals. Myself being an average golfer, I'm probably not going to go around and tap down every single spike mark in my line. Now, I will repair the ball marks, as you mentioned, but I don't know if I care that much to tap down everything that's in my line when I'm playing on Saturday afternoon. I'm just trying to play and enjoy the day. So I think that one change might have been more for the professionals, but I think it is a good one. A lot of the greens now in our area are going to Bermuda, so you don't really see as many spike marks as you used to see with the bent greens, but I think it's a good idea to allow people to smooth the greens out.
Speaking of spike marks, and you mentioned this came to the pro game, the pros are the only ones left, and even they, there are a few of these guys doing it that still wear nails. Again, I'm old enough to remember having actual spikes on the shoes and knowing what a spike mark looks like. Now that spike marks can be repaired, and let's be honest, from an agronomical standpoint, it helps Bermuda to have spikes and making the aeration holes, I would think. Do you think that actual spikes could make a comeback?
That is a question I really have not thought about. That's not a bad idea, I guess. I do not know much about growing grass. I know a lot about the rules of golf, but I don't know much about growing grass. So I can't speak to whether that would be a great thing for the courses or not.
Well, let's get back to the rules. Chris Zay with the CGA, our guest taking dead aim. We mentioned briefly searching for a golf ball, and the search has now shortened in time from 5 minutes to 3 minutes. Was the thinking on this, if you can't find it in three, you're not going to find it in five?
I guess that's what they're saying, and I think for the most part, people don't have watches on them. I know the group I play with, we're not standing right over you when you're looking for your ball with a stopwatch in our hands. But so if you don't find it, let's go ahead and move on. And I think that might be what their theory was when they changed that.
Another rule, and this may be the last one I have on my list that I think really affects the recreational or amateur game, and recreational in terms of if you happen to caddy for your youngster on any tournament, there's no longer the allowance for caddies to assist players in alignment. And you see this a lot. It's going to be really impact the professional ladies game. I didn't see it a lot on the professional men's game, but I know when my son was coming along, there was a lot of time that I would stand behind him and say, okay, that looks good, and then step aside. That is no longer permitted?
That is correct. You can no longer stand behind the player when they are preparing to take their stance for their next shot. And I agree with you. I think it was more put into play for the professional game than it really was thought of as at a junior level. I think maybe juniors probably do need it more than professionals. I need it myself. It'd be great to have somebody line me up every time, but I think that is why they put that in play. Let's speed this game up. We don't need somebody backing off four or five times to line up a driver down the middle. I mean, let's just go ahead and hit it.
Get you out of here on this. Of the things that we have not talked about, what is one or two rules that you think are really going to impact our game?
Well, I think on the everyday level, I really think the flag stick would be the most impactful one, because I think we're going to leave it in now. I think a lot more people are going to be able to play with it in, and I know if you're playing in a semi-serious group of people, that they probably did take the flag stick out every time you were putting, and now you can leave it in. They might leave it in every once in a while. So I think that's going to be helpful, and I think overall, just the whole entire thing, just knowing the rules, I think, is what people need to know, is that it's a lot more common sense, it seems like, and so I think the whole book is really boiled down to common sense, and I think that people are going to be able to enjoy the game, and I think it's going to change it a lot in the tournament play, but for your everyday play, golf is still hard. So let's make the rules a little easier so people aren't getting penalized for things, I guess.
From the CGA, that's the director of men's golf, Chris Zay. I'd also like to thank Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, and Austin Cook's caddy and my personal life coach, Kip Henley, for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version finishes airing. Also, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Currently featured there are articles on the greatest par 3 courses in the world. And yes, the Cradle from Pinehurst is included in that list. A theory that Jordan Spieth has the yips. And a cautionary tale of identifying your own ball from last week with Dustin Johnson. Weather-wise, it's going to take a brave soul to soldier through the elements this weekend and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. But if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.